Welcome to the Journey to Midwifery podcast. This is a podcast for and about midwives. This is the place where midwives come to share their stories. I am your host, Amber Wilson, a midwife myself. I felt called to this journey of sharing the stories of midwives around the globe, and I hope you will find as much joy listening as I do interviewing. Remember, life is about the journey.
Okay, welcome to another episode of both Journey to Midwifery, the podcast. I'm guest hosting. This is Jamie Girton, and I'm here with James Austin V, and she's a certified nurse midwife working out of Tucson with a very special program that she's going to tell us about. And we'll hear her journey to midwifery, but then also this is going to function as an interview that we'll post on the Mentorship for Midwives platform hosted by Midwife Nation to help all of our student midwives, aspiring midwives, and potentially new graduates find out what is a midwifery fellowship, how do you find one, what are the benefits, and where to go to get more information. So I'm so excited you're here. Introduce yourself, give us a little bit of background, and then we'll launch into your story, James.
Thank you, Jamie. I'm so excited to be here. I love talking about midwifery. And when I was trying to find out how to be a midwife, it was really hard to find information. So I love hearing people's stories, and I love to tell my own too. I'm James Austin V. It is a family name. It goes all the way back to my great-great-grandfather, but I'm the first woman in the line. And it's been both confusing and delighting people my whole life.
I love that. It's at least a point of a conversation, you know, spark right at the beginning. You're like, yes, yes, right. Yes, yes, it's a family name. Yes, all of these things. And then you launch right in. Okay, so start with where did you come to find out about midwifery? Was that something that you knew all along was for you? Did you stumble into it? How did you find out about it? And then kind of into the process of where did you go for choosing a school and which pathway, right? Did you consider being CPM or an LM versus the CNM or the CM pathway?
Perfect, yeah. So I did always know about midwives. I had a lay midwife at my own birth. My mom really wanted to give birth at home, but she didn't have insurance coverage, didn't seem like an option. And so she brought her midwife with her to the hospital. And that was a woman who I knew my whole life long. And her wife was also a midwife. And she ended up being a CNM and did birth and then transitioned into a gynecology practice at the end of her career. So I've always known midwives. And I also grew up on a sheep farm. And so I always knew that birth was the coolest thing around. And I loved the animal birth part of things. And I love little lambs. But I also really like to talk to strangers. And I thought, I don't want to be a vet. So when I was in college and undergraduate, I thought, this is it. I want to be a midwife, but I don't want to spend my undergraduate with a bunch of really aggressive and stressed pre-med students. And I also am, 18 or 19. I don't know anything about the world. And so I wanted to take the long road. So that was on purpose, but like many long roads, the long road got longer, right? I was a Spanish teacher. I was a firefighter. I was a ski patroller. And then I was like, okay, it's time to wiggle my way towards midwifery. And I worked in product development in Seattle. And then I got a call and I ended up being an adventure nanny for billionaires for 3 years, 3.5 years. And then I was the director of a summer camp in Shanghai. And then I finished my prereqs and started midwifery school. So it took me 3 years to get all my prereqs done, which was something that a dear friend had told me when she was planning midwifery or nursing school. She said, it took me 3 years to get my prereqs. And I was like, you're just not that motivated. But it took me 3 years to get my prereqs. And I went to, I think, 6 different community colleges in 3 different states to kind of living with family sometimes to make that work, working, I was still a nanny for part of it. So I was able to do night classes in San Francisco. I still have never been to a home birth. So I did think about being a CPM. I love home birth. I believe in it. I wish we had more of it. But ultimately, I think with background of EMT, firefighter, ski patroller, I wanted the flexibility of being a nurse. as well. And initially I had wanted to practice as a nurse before being a midwife, but then by the time I got around to midwifery school, I felt very old. So I was like, I just got to go straight through. And then, backing up just a bit, when I was looking for midwifery schools, it was really tricky to know which programs were which. I felt like the internet's so powerful, and yet I couldn't find the answers always about, you know, what programs were, how much they cost. It was pretty murky out there. But I narrowed my search. I decided I will only apply to schools where I can see the mountains from the school, and I have greater than or equal to 2 friends in that town, which was a play for community and for the things that I love to do, to be outside. And I both don't regret it, and I also wish that there had been a better way to talk to current students of programs to know what their experience was and if they would recommend it, and to talk more about the finances of it. I ended up at Seattle University. Seattle, many mountains all around, many friends, many greater than 2 friends there for me. But it did turn out to be the most expensive program in the country. And we were the first year that they switched entirely to the DNP. And so, as many people, not hard to figure out, right? When you're the first year of something, there's going to be a lot of hiccups. And so we worked really hard to make the program better. And it's really different than it was when I was there. I'm also a COVID midwife. And so our clinicals were supposed to start in June of 2020. And so the other thing that is atypical of my path is that, you know, our clinicals got bounced to the fall, but I wasn't sure that that was even going to be true. And I was really worried that my whole experience was going to be dominated by COVID. And so I thought, here's the time that I was hoping that I had. So I moved to Alaska. I moved above the Arctic Circle to work at a small hospital in a town of 2,000 people that served an area about the size of Ohio, where only 8,000 people live. There's no roads. You know, you get around by plane or by snowgo or by boat in the summer. And there's 11 villages, and that town that I was in, Kotzebue, Alaska, is the hub. And so I got to work as a nurse, and I was an inpatient nurse, an emergency room nurse, and a labor and delivery nurse when we had deliveries, which was only about 40 a year. It's a birth center environment, no epidurals, no Pitocin augmentation, no operating room. You got to get on a plane if you need one of those. And so, but through that, I was able to finish my clinical. So I'd fly down to Anchorage, or I'd fly to Fairbanks, and I'd work 7 days in a row as a student midwife. And then I'd come back, I'd work 7 days in a row as a nurse. That enabled me to get loan repayment through the state of Alaska. Mm-hmm. So I got $40,000 from the state of Alaska for my 2 years of service there, which was a huge help to me, and, you know, was making full-time income while I was in midwifery school. Yep. I'm not married. I don't have kids. I've got 2 great dogs. So that made the logistics easier. And I had community all around me. So a lot of people fed me, a lot of people, mostly feeding me is what people did, to get me through. And I think, that is the benefit of being in a really small town, or one of them. Yeah. And so I graduated 6 months late. And off I went. Should I say anything more that, questions you have about the midwifery school part of things?
I think you covered most of it. So when the COVID break happened, what did the school give mm-hmm. you for guidance? Were they just, this is our best guess, we think your clinicals will start in 6 months, or, you know what, we really don't know. We understand that you've enrolled in this 3-year program, but we're just not sure what's going to happen. I mean, I think it was probably the best thing that they could give you for guidance, but as a student, were you just like, okay, just going to roll with it?
Yeah, it was really tough. Right. And I thought, you know, they didn't make any promises, because there was not a lot of certainty. And so when I looked at that decision, it was like, okay, I can't guarantee that my clinicals are going to start in September, but I can guarantee that I can get experience and make money while I'm waiting. And I know that we can figure out a way to finish school. Yeah. And, you know, my classmates did a lot of different things. One of the things that changed in one of these big kind of foundational parts of different midwifery programs, Seattle U does provide clinical sites. But with the COVID shakeup, that wasn't totally true anymore, right? We were all kind of scrambling and everybody was pitching in. And so I found one of my own clinical sites and the school found me. Some others, one of my professors had a history working in Alaska, so she had connections there. But I think that's one of the big things to think about when you're looking for midwifery school is the burden of finding your own clinical sites versus schools that will guarantee that for you.
Oh my gosh. I would have precepted you. I was in Alaska in 2020 and
Oh my
2021 in
gosh.
Anchorage. I would have taken you.
Oh,
We were at a military base, but at Anchorage and Jay Bear.
oh
Oh my
my
gosh, I would
gosh.
have
Yeah,
taken
I
you in
was
a
at
heartbeat.
I worked at ANMC was my hospital site, and then Geneva Woods Birth Center, and they were both wonderful and absolutely shaped me as a midwife. I loved it. Alaska's so special.
It's so special.
It's
We
the
dearly
best.
want to go back as soon as possible. It's a great state for midwifery. It's a great state for lots of things, lots of mountains and
It's a
just
great state for
majestic beauty.
midwifery.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Now, okay, one more follow-up question. When you told your faculty, I'm gonna go do some work in Alaska and then I'll ping back down here for my other responsibilities, what did they say? Were they just kind of like, you know what, we're gonna support this because we haven't really given you guidance of anything else, and you might as well go do those things, right? Get some help with tuition, make some income, get some experience. I mean, I would be so proud if you were my student. I'd be like, look at her go. She's gonna go make the best of this time. Yeah,
They were
but
super
they.
supportive, and it was a gamble. I mean, it was I planned for 2 years, but I told myself if this is a toxic work environment, you know, if I'm not going to stay at 2 years, 2 years at the expense of my health and wellness. But it turned out to be just an amazing place, and you know, it's the majority of the population off the road system is Alaska Native. And so getting to work with Alaska Native folks and learn more and I mean just it opened up so many doors. And I think if you can work during your midwifery program, I'm a huge advocate for that. And I was working with elders a lot of the time. I'm not going to work with elders for most of my career. And I think that the temporary nature of it made it like all the more sweet, you know, to be able to really learn something about a different field. It doesn't have to be, you know, I don't think people should feel that they have to work in L&D, that that's the only place. It helps. It can help when you're trying to get that first job. People definitely look for that, but I think there's a lot of ways to deepen your practice as a care provider. So yeah, I loved it. And then yeah, the extra option for loan repayment was massively helpful. I did when I was in Seattle, I worked all the I was all the jobs. I delivered tables to events for a friend's beautiful wooden table company. I was a Clif Bar representative skiing around in the Clif Bar suit, giving out free granola bars. I was taking care of my friend's children. I was, you know, once I got my nursing degree, then I was, you know, doing all kinds of temp nursing in, you know, residential eating disorder, in community health, just kind of always trying to. I only took out loans for school, for tuition.
Wow, girl,
So
you
that
were
was,
hustling, just straight up
I
hustling.
was. I didn't
I
sleep
love
much.
it. But I feel like you have to do that as a midwife too. So it's really a good practice for the midwifery career. Okay, so you did all these amazing things and then you finally made it to graduation. I think a lot of times people are interested in how did you study for boards? Did you go through a prep course? Did your school prep you? Did you take them right away? Did you take a break and study? So what did you do?
Yeah, this is a great conversation because I actually failed the first time I took AMCB, and I have never failed a test or quiz ever in my life. I've really never gotten, I mean, maybe I got a C once in my life. I mean, I've historically just been a very good test taker. I'm a fast reader. Tests have always come really easy to me. And so it was a big hit to my spirit to fail this test that I care so much about, or this, you know, for the outcome that I care so much about. And I think my big mistake is that I prepared wrong. So I was doing, I found some test question banks that were kind of like high level OBGYN. And it was clear that like the questions that were out of scope were very clear. Mm-hmm. Like I would skip over things about suture technique on hysterectomies, right? But then there was all this other stuff that was fascinating. And so I was like, kind of like getting into all of this material. And I can't, truly, I can't remember the name of the question bank that I was using, but I was so fascinated and it had nothing to do with AMCD. But you know, I did the pink book and I kind of was like, that doesn't seem like enough. But it is enough. It really, really is. So I went back and I just solely focused on the pink book. I did all the questions again. I made a lot of flashcards. I had a better idea of the test and a couple of the things like how much memorization is required. There's a lot of questions that don't require critical thinking. You have to know like lab values. I didn't understand that. I didn't truly understand that like all the lab values were on you to memorize. Mm-hmm. And when I am a more experienced midwife and have a little more time, mm-hmm. I would love to be a test question writer for AMCB and make some big changes because there's no reason to have so much memorization on a mm-hmm. test when it has no relevance to your day-to-day. There's no lab results that don't come with a set of normals right by them. It just doesn't happen anymore. So, you know, stuff like that, I would love to see a lot more kind of critical thinking on the exam. There are also like random factoids that like, you're just never, you just know them or you don't. And you know, I feel like students shouldn't waste too much time kind of trying to know every random factoid in Varney's. But the other program I use that I did really like, and now I can't remember the name of, is some midwives who do a podcast and they also do a prep course.
Is it the Educated Midwife?
Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, that one. And so okay. I did like the cheaper version. Yeah. And I liked it because you could listen to it.
Yeah.
So the content was good. It was really good on the menstrual cycle. And it was really nice to have an audio modality that I could be walking to work. I could be cooking dinner and I could just have like midwifery study material in my ears. So that, I did really like that.
I got to meet them at the,
oh, great.
When did I meet them? At a conference, at an ACNM conference. They did a panel about, they were talking about their school, but they were talking about how they do the podcast on the side. It's very fascinating to hear. They're just two faculty members that said, hey, we have a lot more to say. And I thought, that's really just a natural path off of teaching. And I'm so glad that they continue to do it.
Yeah, well, I think about everything you're doing and what they're doing and just, again, like how do we share more of this?
Yes.
And it is so powerful. So, so those things were really helpful and I took it and I passed. And the other wonderful thing about the whole experience is that I've connected with so many people now, you know, mm-hmm. and so now, you know, the people from Seattle U who didn't pass texted me, we get on the phone, we pep talk it, you know, we like go through all the emotions and all the steps and all, and okay, here we are. And I'm, you know, I get to be a cheerleader for them. And then some of them have connected me with students from other schools who don't pass. And so now I get calls from random people who haven't passed just to chat, which again, that opportunity to connect with folks mm-hmm. and to be on their side and to be another hype woman for them has been really, really amazing. And it wouldn't have happened if I just passed and walked off like so smug, like, oh, I'm so good at tests. Mm-hmm. So ultimately it was an experience that I'm grateful for besides having to give AMCB more of my money and time.
I know, but empathy, like you said, having walked the path, you have empathy. Yeah. And so when people are calling you and just saying, hey, I need that pep talk, my hopes and dreams and everything is crushed, you know, you can offer them a lot that others cannot because you've walked the path.
Okay. I love it. I feel so lucky.
That's amazing. And then is there a time that they say if you don't pass boards, do you have to wait a certain number of months before you can take it again? or are you allowed to retest pretty
it's
quickly?
30 days, I think, is the first round. And then if you don't pass twice, I think you got to bump it a little bit longer, but I can't remember. But mine was 30 days, and that's what I did. I was like, I took 2 weeks, I took a week to go skiing with friends and not touch a book. And then I dove into it with vigor and took it right away. I didn't want to kick the can down the road too much more.
Okay. Well, that is a lot, but if we go backwards just a little bit, so right up into, their integration, those last couple of months where you're learning all of your skills and then right for graduation, were you looking for jobs yet? Or did you already have an idea of what you wanted to do for jobs? Or were you just
my timeline? Yeah. So my timeline was a little different because of COVID and because of Alaska. And so I had this loan repayment contract that I had to fulfill. So I graduated in December. I passed February 8th, big day. And then I couldn't start working. I couldn't leave my RN position in Kotzebue until September. So I had that lead time, though I was, working full time, but it didn't feel like I was working full time because now I wasn't doing school also. So once I was done with school, I felt like I had so much extra time, and it takes a long time for school to get out of your nervous system, right? Like you feel like something is due. You feel like you have to write a discussion post and reply to two of your classmates, and you don't. So it takes a little while to decompress from that. And I was really glad to have that time. And then the other thing that I didn't know, but to consider for folks, is just in some states, at least, it takes 3 to 6 months to get credentialed. And I think that is improving a little bit as we move farther away from COVID backups in different systems. But I was working one day in the ER, and I was, and we didn't have any patients in our little 5-bed ER. And I was Googling for midwifery jobs, and I found this midwifery residency in Arizona. And so I ended up interviewing in, I guess, March, and then was offered the position. I started all my paperwork in May, and then I wasn't approved to be in the hospital until December. So that is something to think about when people are just, when they're like, I want to start working right after school. First of all, take a break, take some naps. Like, don't, I know we all need to be making money quick. We got that debt, but like, exhale, get it out of your system is definitely what I would say. And then, but then also recognize that some of that might be built in because of that. Like, the interview process takes always longer than we think it's going to. And then, applying, getting everything sorted out, and then getting to the point where you can actually be working. So, that timeline, unfortunately, it meant that I also couldn't take any time between stopping my RN job and starting the fellowship. And I would have liked that, but this fellowship was too good an opportunity to pass up. So, I got to fulfill my loan repayment for Alaska, which was huge.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Now, when you were sitting there in the ER with no patients and you found the fellowship, were you looking particularly for any state, or were you just like, I am open to anything? Were mountains part of your decision?
Yeah. I'm like, mountains, friends. I mean, because when I moved to Kotzebue, there are mountains in Alaska, many, but Kotzebue is the tundra. So I did not know anyone there. So I broke all my rules for midwifery school when I moved to Alaska, and it worked out great. But I was wanting to go back to friends, and mountains. Yeah. I would love to rotate up to Alaska and to Kotzebue specifically in the future, but people would ask me like, are you going to stay? Are you staying now that you're a midwife? Are you going to stay and be a midwife? Yeah. And the answer is, being in a town that small for me really didn't make sense, because you have to be so safe. You have to have such good muscle memory with emergencies when they come up, and you have to be able to anticipate, and there's just not the mentorship in a town that small. And so I didn't see it as a viable option for me to stay. I did apply to ANMC and had the thought of going there, and I didn't get that position. Mm-hmm. I didn't have enough Alaska seniority. The other ladies had been in Alaska a lot longer than I have, which really matters up there. And so that one didn't work out. I would have loved to work there too. But was looking for, and I did end up, I interviewed around, like I interviewed with a practice that was just bringing on midwives for the first time. Mm-hmm. That didn't seem like it was going to be enough mentorship for me, but I wanted, I was interested in the experience of interviewing, and I didn't want to rule anything out before talking to people. And so there was a great practice that I was interested in Washington State that really worked with new grads. But it wasn't in a town where I knew anyone. And so part of the appeal of the fellowship was not just the experience, but was the fact that it was like another year where that would prepare me to be a better candidate to move to a town that I wanted to stay, because I do want to live in a smaller town. And so, you know, you can probably find a midwifery. I mean, Seattle is kind of saturated with midwives, but you can probably find a midwifery job in Seattle. There's a lot of different practices, but in a lot of the towns, mountain towns that I want to live in, there's one practice. Mm-hmm. And so they aren't necessarily hiring new grads. And so this was also a move for me to be a little bit less of a new grad and maybe be able to make a more permanent move. So that was another reason why it was attractive to me. There are mountains in Tucson. There's no snow, or sometimes there's snow way up high. And I also have family here. My uncle has a cattle ranch 2 hours away from Tucson. So it was, you know, it started to have all of, you know, all the job and. And so I was really excited by the time I applied for this one. I was very much hoping to get this job.
Okay. So tell us about the fellowship. So what does the fellowship entail? How many do they take in the fellowship in a given year or cohort, however they divide it out? And then what was your spin up? It took a long time for you to get credentialed. That's really common. I always tell new grads, I say plan for 6 months. Hopefully it's sooner, but it could be 9. A year, it's usually done in less than a year. But I think you come out of school and you're like, I'm ready to catch the babies. And then you're like, wait.
Yeah.
I can't even get in the hospital.
Oh, I was so surprised. I had no idea. So this program is really great. So we have we're on our fourth year of the residency here at El Rio. It's a community health center, federally qualified community health center. And it is a year-long residency. We only have one midwife. So that's a bummer. And we're trying to scale up to 2. We would love that, just so that they had a buddy. What they do have is a relationship with the FNP residency that El Rio runs, which does have, I think, more like 10. And so everyone starts at the same time. So you do orientation with that whole group of residents, which gives you a little bit of community. And then you also are invited to do any, they have didactic lectures on Thursdays. And so the midwifery fellow is welcome to come to those lectures. And, you know, if they're relevant to midwifery, I had a ball in these lectures again, like to just be in a lecture, just to learn. You didn't have to write a paper on it. You didn't have to write a discussion post on it. You got to meet all these cool people from the El Rio system, from Tucson. And so that it did not feel like a school obligation at all for me. Because no homework. And so the basic framework of the residency for midwives is you start, you do this orientation, and then you start out just in clinic. I was in clinic for 2 months. This last resident got into the hospital after just 1 month in clinic. So that was great. But you start in clinic, and in clinic, you start just shadowing a few midwives. And then after you've shadowed and you kind of like have the flow down, then you start taking patients off their schedule. So you're still working with a midwife, taking patients off their schedule. And then you get your own patient panel of about 10 patients. A full day for us is 18. And so you start with 10 patients a day. And then the next month you have 12, and the next month 14, 16, until you have a full schedule. And what that allowed me to do was to really dial in my system. So my smart phrases, you know, how I run a gyn visit versus a prenatal at different stages versus a postpartum, like what's my spiel, you know, what do I do when something unexpected comes up, all of that. So you have the time and you're never in clinic alone. So there's always another midwife there. You're smart for it. You're charting, like, and then being able to spend time on UpToDate or consulting with colleagues or physicians in between patients or during a patient visit, you have the time to do that. And so by the time I had 18 patients, my systems were all set. I'd tried things that didn't work and then I'd replace them with things that did. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think I've only stayed late to chart, I mean, in the single digits. You know, there was one really busy day where they had to kick me out at 9, you know, but like it allowed me to get the systems in place to not be staying late to chart. And when you start out at some of these, you know, some jobs that don't have a long orientation period and don't make adjustments for you being a new grad, if you just have 18 or 20 or 22 patients a day from the start, you're never going to get your systems right. Because there's just not time. You just got to see the next person. And so that's the clinic side of things. And then the hospital side of things, we do all our deliveries at TMC, which is I really love it there. And the cool thing about being a midwife there is that we have our own alongside midwifery unit in the hospital. So a two room birth center. So we're allowed to do, you know, we're AACB accredited. So we can do water birth, intermittent auscultation. We can do IV pain meds. But then if, you know, of course, if you decide to transfer for an epidural, you just open the door, you go to L&D. If there's an emergency, you open the other door, you can get into the OR in a moment. So, it's really, really beautiful. And probably, let's see, I think I did around 12% of my births. So I did about 100 births in a year at the hospital. And yeah, about, I think I did 12 in the midwifery center. So it's a minority of the births that you do, but it's still there. So getting to practice both hospital birth and birth center birth. So that was really special. For the fellowship, you do work only night shift, because at night shift, so we work 7 to 7s, and at night we staff 2 midwives. At the day, there's just 1. So as the resident, you're only on it. You do some day shifts and some night shifts, and then you transition into just night shift. Mm-hmm. That can definitely be challenging, but again, 12s are not 24s, and you can get them scheduled back to back. That works better for most people. And I actually liked it so much that I stayed on night shift now that I'm full-time with the practice, partially just because I love working with other midwives. And one of the special things about the night is also that we deliver all the physician patients for the physician group at our, at El Rio, we take all their normal patients at night. So you have a higher volume of births as well at night, which is very special. So those are all great things. That's like your midwifery part of things. And then you also get to rotate around and do shadow days in all the different parts of this giant FQHC, right? So I was over at pelvic floor PT. I was in pediatrics. I was at just primary care. I was at the infectious disease. What else did I do? Oh, OBGYN. I think 3 days shadowing it at our OBGYN office. So the residents end up having like a much better idea even of like all the services that El Rio can offer and all the things you can connect your patients with. So that was really special as well.
That's amazing. And just to build up your confidence, I feel that sometimes we don't talk about how important confidence is in those first 2 years after graduating.
Yeah.
So that, again, you have your spiels and you know what to say and you know what your resources are. And sometimes you just are in the, you know, fire hose spray of whatever is dropped into your clinic or on labor and delivery. And you're like, I don't have time to look it up right now. And I don't know, but I'll figure it out eventually. Mm-mm. Oh my goodness. That sounds absolutely amazing.
And that's what everyone says is they're like, I just wish I could have done what you did. I wish that too for everybody.
Well, I mean, I'm not surprised that you stayed. So tell us, what was the point where you thought, okay, I think this is the place where I want to put my midwifery roots down. And what was that process like? Do you have to interview? Is it more of a backdoor? Yeah. Like, hey, I'd like to stay.
I did have to interview. I mean, one of the things is I just kept hearing, you know, this is my first job. So I can, you know, you have your student positions, but you you know, it's my first job. So, but I kept hearing other midwives say who had, you know, who'd been in practice for 10 years or 5 years or longer say, this is the best midwifery job I've ever had. And it's like, okay, I'm listening, you know? And what makes it the best midwifery job they've ever had? You know, we're a big group practice. I think there's 20 of us. Mm-hmm. We get along really well. We respect each other. And we are a very much a shared mindset in terms of serving the patient population that we serve. Mm-hmm. You have birth center, you have hospital, you have 12s, not 24s. Yeah. We do really work a 40-hour week, which I think is, you know, and we, it's, I'm trying to think what it is. It's a two week shift is four, or like 2 week pay period is 5 clinic, 3 call. And people really do, they are 18 patients a day. Of course, mm-hmm. I wish it was less, but, fewer, but it's more manageable than definitely some other practices I've heard of. We do centering. I lead a centering group. I love that. And we have this amazing patient population who's, a large percentage of them are Hispanic. So I do a lot of visits, in Spanish, which I love. Mm-hmm. That's one of the drawbacks of one of the things that we're really working on as a practice is that we are almost all white. Mm-hmm. And in almost everywhere else at El Rio, the providers' demographics match the patient population demographics, and the midwives are the exception. And so that's something we'd really like to change in the years to come. But it's a great, respectful, vibrant practice. Yeah, we have a great working relationship with our physicians. Mm-hmm. TMC, the nurse pool, they're working with, I think, 5 different groups. So it's not only El Rio that delivers at TMC. So that can be challenging, but the nursing staff is really supportive of midwifery. And we love working with them too. So yeah, it's just a really... Yeah. It's a really solid place to work. So great, I wanted to stay.
Okay. Now you said they're looking to grow the fellowship, right? So hopefully from one mm-hmm. to maybe two, yeah. which would be amazing. Yeah. But before that, how many, because you said this was the fourth year, have all mm-hmm. of the prior fellows just been hired into the practice, or were you the first one?
I was the second one. Okay. To be hired into the practice. Yeah. Okay. And there were, you know, COVID definitely shook some things up. So there were some kind of atypical years in there, but the woman who was the fellow before COVID, she got hired on, and then me, and then we'll see. And we haven't, you know, it's not organized as a pipeline, but it certainly like is welcome to be one. Yep. I did want to mention other details just so people can, I skipped over this when I was talking about choosing this position. So what I found when I was looking for other kind of like midwifery fellowship or residency positions is some of them were very low paid, like a stipend, which is rude, and also understandable because midwives have not historically been great at making money. But at this position is, when I was the fellow anyway, was $80,000 salary, with full benefits, $1,800 for CME and 5 days for CME. They paid $5,000 for relocation, which if you don't think your place offers relocation, you should always ask. Yeah. So retirement, I mean, just a very reasonable, benefits package. The bummer was that I couldn't qualify for student loan repayment. And that's because it was a 1-year position and most of those programs require 2 years. I was allowed to apply for a loan repayment while I was still a resident, and I was awarded $50,000 from the state of Arizona. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I was a full-time, that kicked in. And so I've committed to at least 2 years with this practice. And then my loans will be gone. So wow. through, you know, $90,000 combined yeah. from Alaska and Arizona, And then, you know, a considerable amount out of pocket that I paid. I paid, I think, three terms out of pocket in college. And then, well, it was more than $40,000 in Alaska, because I was also able to use some of my continuing education money for tuition as well. But yeah, generally just like great news, but tough. Like as a resident, you're taking a reduced salary. Like, it's like, can I get loan repayment too?
Right.
But you can apply for those programs while you're a resident. So
that's amazing. Oh, nice. And good for you too. Yeah. You're going to feel like a different midwife when your loans
so
are gone.
Good.
Yes. And all the hustle, you're going to be like, this was so worth it.
So worth it.
But the $80,000, I think that's incredibly reasonable. Now, if you have a spouse and kids and other things, that might become difficult, but I think it is enough to get you through the year. And you're balancing that against all that amazing experience you talked about, but also just having a midwife walk with you for a year out of school and continue to teach you, right? And answer all your questions.
And many midwives. That was the thing. It's like, I got to learn from, 16, 20 different midwives, like side by side. And I was, I was very independent by the end of it, but there's always someone there that you can chat with about things. And it wasn't, they weren't in the room all year at all, but they were there and and asking me questions and and again, just in the most supportive way, like, why did you make this decision? Like, what could you have done differently? And then I would also shadow them around and be in the room and just watch them be midwives. And we don't get that. We're once you're in practice, like you're just there out there alone. So all the midwives that I worked with were like, I want to know what, I want to know what Jody's like. I want to know what Michelle's like. Like, I'm like, I know I get to see all this cool stuff and take their teachings and adjust them. Yeah. And so,
I
did say that. So
go ahead.
Oh, just I about the salary. I at the end of the year, they had hired a new grad who's a good friend of mine. But at the end of the year, I looked at her and I just said, like, the pay cut was worth it. You know, there's no doubt. Like watching what you had to do and go through versus what the time that I got to spend, I had no regrets about that year.
And honestly,
I think it's very fair.
Most new grads, I think, are making about $100,000 out of school. So we're not talking about $50,000 to $60,000 difference. And I think that the wisdom and the teaching and the mentorship, I mean, I don't know if you can put a price on it. Yeah. It's probably, a six-figure price, whatever. It might differ from person to person, but incredibly valuable.
Yeah. And I mean, I think there's some reasonable resistance to the idea of a residency or a fellowship in midwifery, because we have had to fight so hard for our seat at the table, that I understand why some people are really cagey about it. You know, they don't want anyone to think that we need more training. And I just would push back on that and say, it doesn't matter if you're a lawyer or a painter or, or a chef or, whatever you are, what you learn in school and then being independent, there's something in between.
Yeah.
And with the rates of burnout in midwifery and the stories that I've heard from so many people, I really deeply believe that we need more of these programs that compensate people fairly, that are thoughtful, in how they adjust how they build, how they build you up as a midwife. It's not, I don't think they should be seen as, these programs are for for new grads who need more support. We could all use more support. And so it shouldn't be, it's nothing to be, ashamed of. It's just seeking out again. And people are like, I'm going to be fine. But do you really, is that what you want to be? Do you want to be a fine midwife? Do you want to be fine your first year?
Yeah.
Like, no, you want to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And, a professor said to me, like, look, you're prepared to be a new midwife. And there's no amount, nothing anyone says to you is not going to make you feel crummy for being a new midwife, because you just know in your heart that in 10 years, the patients that you have are going to get better care. But you do the best you can. And yeah. And if you can and be supported during that time when you're new, I think that's massive. So I
agree with that. And I would argue, I've seen enough residents coming out of their OBGYN residency and moving into that first year practice that they need mentorship too, because it's not the same as where you trained. And a lot of physicians do not stay in their same hospital system. And you have to learn how other people do it. And then evidence is always changing, right? So sometimes what you learned in school is not what your institution or your clinic does. I totally agree. Okay. And then with the fellowship, I was going to ask you a question earlier. I'll ask it before I forget. It's a new fellowship. It's just been, you said, four fellows that you've had, but whose idea was it initially to say, we want to launch this fellowship. Here's what we think it's going to bring benefit wise. Who was the brainchild behind the fellowship?
Oh man, I don't know the answer to that. And I will go find out because, but we've had the same director of midwifery, who's wonderful. And we've had a lot of our group, we have really great retention in our practice, unsurprisingly. So, I'm not sure, but the FNP program has been around for a little bit longer. So part of it might have come from seeing success there. But they are, I believe they're grant funded. And for us, the resident pays for themselves. So we see enough patients that our salary is covered by that, which means that it's a really adaptable program to the needs of that resident versus having to fulfill strict requirements for a grant funded program. I know different programs will fund in a really different way. And I mean, we love the program. We love having students also, but we love this program, and that's why we want to up it to two. And then they can have a buddy, which would be really nice to have someone there with you.
Okay. And then moving forward. So we were talking a little bit before we started kind of in the background. There are other fellowships out there that we will figure out the names of. And there was, I'll send the link to, we found a DMP project where somebody did an analysis of these are the fellowships in the United States. So talk a little bit more about that and what you kind of know, although we still don't have the names of the program. So we'll work to find those. But it sounds like this is something that maybe we're moving forward, hopefully in the midwifery profession, just as an option. Again, not for everybody, greatly beneficial for everybody, but talk a little bit more about that, kind of what you think it would be for the profession if we had more of this, especially in the larger hospital systems. I think TMC is Tucson Medical Center, right?
Correct. That's right.
Tucson Medical Center. I recommend they have a free childbirth class that somebody taped on YouTube years ago.
Oh yeah. It's actually one of the most popular in the country. One of my centering patients just told me that.
Yes. I recommend it. I've been recommending it for years for people that they don't have, maybe they don't have the time to go. They don't have the money. They don't have I'm like, listen, you can find the 6 hours to watch this with your partner.
Yeah.
And I don't even know what the number of views are. It's probably astronomical because I've been recommending it for
millions.
So long.
Yeah. I didn't know it was that popular until one of my centering people just told me, but.
But that's how I know about Tucson TMC's Medical Center. It's because of this free childbirth class I've been recommending forever. But anyway, go back. Awesome. So fellowship wise, what do you know? Tell us the things.
So in the DNP, this DNP paper, the author found 17 different programs in the country. As part of my program improvement project, I wrote a handbook for our fellowship. And so I was trying to find different fellowships in the country and reach out to their directors and ask if they would share their handbook or parts of their handbook or material, like anything they kind of were able to share, or just have a conversation, like, how is your fellowship organized? And I found not 17. So that's why I would love to have a more comprehensive list. Because if she found 17 in 2022, hopefully there are even a few more. And I would love for students to know about those. We're in the process of interviewing for our next, and we had 9 applicants, which is great, but also, like, how many more would we have if more people knew? We had 9 applicants from 7 different schools. All over the country. So I'm very curious how they all found out about this one. Is it just Google, or
I don't know. I linked to
So
this. I linked
some.
to your fellowship in the monthly
Oh yeah.
newsletter in the student section. So I don't know how many students have picked up from it
Oh
there.
great.
But I'm sure you're going to have even more applicants now, since you've told us all your
It's a
wonderful
great
experience.
program, but we need more of them. So some of the programs were much more were kind of in places that had also a medical residency and were a little bit more like structured on a sounded like more like a medical residency and used some of the same like tracking software, which I don't know about. More details than just that. And then some were birth center ones where you were really low paid and on call all the time, which again, there's really wonderful, you can gain really wonderful experience from that too. I remember one birth center, I think in Pennsylvania, I contacted, said they weren't running it that year because they didn't have the resources, but they were planning to bring it back. But I think there's definitely a range of the way programs are run. And Mayo, you posted about the Mayo one recently. I did talk to them. And I think theirs was the one that was like a little bit more like a structured, like a medical residency, but they've got a ton of resources, you know, in those big locations. So I think they were able to send you to multiple locations, which is great for learning. Again, this is not one of the things that I am still working on is how do we define a resident? Because we're not a student, but I found that some midwives were they were wonderful and supportive, but they were kind of like, okay, but what do I do with you? And I would love to have a more dip, like we and it's our goal for by the end of our current resident, by the end of her tenure, can we write better guidance for the whole staff of midwives to say like, this is what this looks like. This is how you can support me versus being a preceptor for a student. How is that different? So, you know,
Kind of a
midwifery in developing these programs, we have to do some definition work also.
And I think it's hard. You've got to have some gray because it's going to be different for every fellow that comes through. That's very interesting. I'm curious to see how that develops for you. Now, okay, is your handbook something that is able to be shared, or is that something that you guys keep within the system?
Well,
I don't know. You
it's still
might.
like a kind of an unofficial, it's kind of an unofficial thing, so I think I could probably share
I think I just because,
it.
right, you shouldn't ever start from scratch if you don't have to. So if there's somebody out there
That's
that was
why
listening, yes, and said, we can do this. We can do this, but we need some scaffold to start with. They could use your handbook. Okay, we'll see. You'll have to
I mean
verify.
that's part of the
Sure.
reason why I it's part of the reason why I did it.
Yeah.
It's just like it's so much easier to start with that and then tweak than do it all from
And then
scratch.
just,
So,
add to it and change and update it year to year based on what your fellows are telling you. Yeah, amazing.
And so,
Okay.
like this year, the thing that I added was we added a journaling prompt every month, and I pull them. You know, that's just something I found that I was spending so much time like checklists and making sure I did it, like was everything ordered, was everything in the right place, that I was missing kind of like the deeper part of the work that we do. And so the current resident and I are working together, and I send her a poem or, you know, some kind of a prompt, and she writes a journal entry back, and they are so beautiful.
Oh,
And that's something that I
yes.
was really missing in my year. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
And you get to see it through your eyes. There, you,
Yeah.
for the new grads or the aspiring midwives or student midwives, you only get to do that once. And once you pass through that gate of seasoned midwife, you don't ever get to go
Yeah.
back. But to see it through their
Yeah.
eyes is amazing. And you think, this is why I did it. This is why I chose this path.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I
Love it.
also agree with you. So you talked about burnout earlier, which I'm so curious.
Yeah.
Bree Thumb does a lot of the burnout research coming out of the Journal of Midwifery and Women's Health. And she has said that same thing, that 5-year time frame. And so I'm so curious, I don't know, maybe run some numbers or papers, give us something, but do your fellows are they showing any of those signs? Am I going to leave the profession? Or, you know, are we building such a foundation with your fellowship experience that you're like, no, I am bolstered by this and I am ready for this profession? I would be so curious if somebody would analyze that.
Yeah, me too.
What you said, like, you're practicing all the things that would prevent burnout, right? You've got the community, you've got the mentorship, you're in a safe place to ask questions, and you're building your confidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all of those things. Yeah, my colleagues, and you know, part of it's my personality, but part of it is the structure and the support that I got. But I think in my annual review, my director wrote like James, like, she reminds us all that being a midwife is fun. Like, and I don't know that that's a theme that I've heard from my, you know, my friends who are new grads and in their first jobs. I don't think that they leave the day like thinking midwifery is really fun, you know, in addition to, you know, excellent risk assessment and keeping everybody really safe and, you know, all the things. But I still, you know, I just like love going to work. And then when I leave work, I'm like, so great. Like, and I think I was able to maintain that spark because of the structure.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Okay. So
I'm
amazing.
Really grateful.
Okay. Last thoughts, to the aspiring midwives, student midwives, somebody that's considering a fellowship, what wisdom do you have that you haven't already touched on?
I'm like, what haven't I said?
You've offered a lot of nuggets along the entire interview we've done. I mean, it's just a gold mine out there for everybody to go grab some. But sometimes I think, depending on our experiences, we have stuff that you're like, this really, you know, played to my heartstrings. And so this is the one thing I want to pass on.
Yeah. I mean, I remember a long time ago when I was walking with a grandfather, not my grandfather, but a grandfather, an elder. And he said, small steps, long way. And I thought about that all of midwifery school. And I think about it still. And again, this is not, taking a fellowship is not a downgrade. It's not backwards. It's a small step for something you're going to do for a long time. Right. And so you nourish, you know, you want to nourish the soil you're planting yourself in. I mean, yes. Like we could metaphor it up for a long time, but but it's such a great way to get where you want to go. Yeah. And so, it's taking good care, of yourself, and, you know, do it not just for you, but for the future generations of midwives, because someday you won't be the new grad. And how are we going to build the whole profession, to not burn out? And so getting more of these programs started is the long-term goal as I see it.
Oh my goodness.
You'd
so
be
many
proud,
good things.
Be proud to be a midwifery resident.
Yes. Okay. Where can people find you? Are you on any of the social media, or do you have a preferred email? How can somebody send you an email or call a friend if they need to?
Yeah. My Instagram is open to the world, at Catcher in the Thighs. And that's also my website, but I'm in the process of revamping my website. So if you type that in, you won't get there yet, but in May, 2024, it'll be done. So, but Instagram's probably the easiest way to reach out, at this point.
Okay. And then I don't think we talked about your website at all. Tell us about your website. What are you doing over there?
Yeah, it's like kind of it's a funny thing, right? Because I am part of a group practice. I don't need to get business. I'm not getting patients or clients at all. I don't have a midwifery side hustle. This is enough of a job. But I found that patients were saying, we Googled you. And I just felt like I would like to have a little bit more of an ownership and authorship of what they find when they Google me. And so what can I, and then I also, yeah, I mean, I'm still kind of conceptualizing, like, well, what is this website? Is it a digital portfolio? Yeah, kind of. Like, this is who I am as a midwife, in a little bit more dimension. Mm-hmm. And then it can be a platform if I ever want to do more, or to do different, but a place where people can mostly just find me. That's a little bit more,
I love that.
I'm not very Googleable. So
I think our patients want that. I think they look up, we use Epic where I work, and there's this little paragraph that they get about the provider. And I think they just want more. They're like, that's great. They went to school here. They like to do this XYZ hobby, but I really want to know, what books do they recommend? Or, you know, what's their, I don't know, favorite nutrition plan for pregnancy. They love those details. Yeah.
Yeah. And I found a friend's helping me with the web design, and one of the things I love about Instagram is being able to promote friends who are doing cool things, birth or not birth related. And that's like, you know, that was the other thing that I wanted to list, was like both Tucson, local Tucson stuff going on, and then also just other friends who are doing amazing things out there, and the community of that, being able to share that digitally. And he was like, he's like, is that important? I mean, like, one of my friends has a jean shorts company, but like, yeah, to me it is. Like, I'm very proud of him. Yeah. And I'm very proud of my friend who runs a summer camp. And I, you know, if somebody's got a kid that wants to go in Aspen, then, you know, that's what, maybe there's another connection there, or maybe they just see that I come from a community that I love and I'm proud of. And I get to show that too. It's not just about me.
Yep.
So, we'll see what it turns out to be, but, some pictures of the dogs, you know, the important stuff.
It'll be so great. Okay. Last question. Any resources that you love, things that you're constantly recommending on podcasts, could be a book recommendation. What are the things you're constantly saying? Like, this is the book I recommend. This is the thing I recommend. Lily
so
Nichols
true.
Just published
so
a new
many things.
Nutrition book.
Yeah. I just bought it.
Yes. So I've been talking about that constantly, because I'm like, her books are wonderful. Everybody should have them. This one's about preconception and fertility, so really everybody should have it. So that's the one that I keep spewing out.
No, I do love that one. I do recommend her stuff a lot. I have like a lending library that I keep at clinic. I was like, where are my books? I can show you. But I love, there's another book that's really sweet called A is for Advice, the Reassuring Kind. That is by this Canadian midwife whose name I can't remember right now, but it's beautiful little book. So I that one is one that people in my centering group take, and then they bring back and they're like, oh, that made me feel so good. But yeah, I do recommend Lily Nichols a lot. I recommend Bedsider for contraception all the time. Mm-hmm. That's nothing new. I subscribe to Feminist Midwives, mm-hmm. Stephanie Tillman. I subscribe to her newsletter and find it very, very useful. So recommend that to folks. I mean, there's so many great folks on Instagram, and that is the way that I get, you know, those, you know, it's like, I feel like Stephanie Tillman, you know, Vagina Chronicles, like, there's so many people that I follow that I wouldn't be the midwife that I am without their input. And I'm so grateful for the ability to connect that way, but.
I know. I love to lift up all those others too, that are doing great. I'm like, listen, this person over here is rocking it. Go follow them. They're putting out great content. Oh my goodness. So great.
So grateful.
Okay, James, this was amazing. I apologize, but not really, because you're going to have this flux of applicants for your fellowship program next year. And when you're looking at your inbox and you're like, oh, there are 45 that we have to interview. You'll know why, because everybody heard your interview and your amazing experience, and they're going to want to have a piece of that. But hopefully by then you'll have more spots for your fellows, if that's what is supposed to happen.
I hope so. Yeah. And we'll have a longer list of programs that people can apply to too.
Yeah. We're going to work on it. We talked offline, and we're going to try and figure it out so that we can offer a list to the public.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, thank you so much again.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Jamie. And to everybody who listens to this, you're doing great. You're doing great. You got this.
Yes.
It's a good life. I love being a midwife.
Last words. Okay.
All right, thanks for listening, and I hope you guys will tune in again next time. Remember, you can email me at journeytomidwiferypodcast@gmail.com, and I'm on Facebook and Instagram as Journey to Midwifery Podcast. Send me your suggestions, or if you'd like to be on the podcast, I would love to hear from you. Until next time.